George, I think we should listen.
Go very well.
Never give and I'll never be. This sing songs us sings this. Never give and I'll never be. This sing songs us sings this.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 27. On this week's show, we are going to rank our top five underappreciated Disney animated films. To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
And to my right is Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. All right, that was Expialidocious by Pogo. You can find that and more of his videos over at youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for the show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is Diz, D-I-S, Magic Hour Pod. And on Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find our little group. You can add that and we'll approve you as long as you don't have like spam and stuff. And head on over to iTunes and drop a 5-star review, please. That is always the best way to support the show, and that and sharing. So, we are going to list our top 5 underappreciated Disney animated films. Are we including Pixar in this as well? Like slash Pixar?
I didn't, because I didn't really think many of them were underappreciated. I mean, I guess okay. I could think of a couple, but I didn't think
I was
them.
Just curious if anyone like blocked out certain things.
I thought it was just a whole Disney mantra.
Okay, like, good. No, whole, good.
No, I don't have any on my list, but I kind of like Melissa. I didn't think any of them were really underappreciated.
Okay.
So that's why I did, none of them really even clicked
I
in my mind.
I thought of it afterwards when I was writing down, when I was typing out the title. I was like, I wonder if I have to differentiate like Disney and Pixar, but since they're the same thing, I didn't really think it mattered.
Yeah.
And then, you know, blah, blah, blah. Other stuff came up. Anyway, so...
Maybe an honorable mention.
Well, there's two that I can think that I thought of after I thought about it. There's two I can...
We'll talk about that maybe at the end. Do you guys just want to jump right into this?
Yeah, let's get going.
Okay. Let's jump right into it. Melissa, actually, why don't you go first to the, on this week?
Okay. We're going to go in reverse order. So my number 5 we're starting with is Sword in the Stone. This was 1963. I picked this one because as a younger kid, I liked it. So I've always kind of had a little affinity towards it. And I do feel like it kind of does get bypassed a lot. I know it's still a presence in the parks, you know, with the Sword in the Stone near the carousels and stuff, and Merlin does come out. But I feel like overall, this isn't a film that... necessarily gets like picked as everyone's faves. Meanwhile, I really do enjoy it.
I don't think it has much of a presence at all. As you're saying, Merlin, but if you were to ask a multiple like people, who's that from?
Yeah, like
you know, who aren't like regulars at the park and everything, they probably wouldn't know. I don't think they would know right off the bat.
No, I don't think so at all. Especially even the Sword in the Stone, they just think it's a cool thing. They probably don't even know what it's, you know, what it represents.
Yeah,
they might not know it's an animated film. So I don't know, just a little background. We'll go background on these things.
Not too far, because we got like 20 movies to go over. So
plus we're gonna go over background when we eventually hit them.
True. I just found a couple interesting things. I'll go through that. The director was Wolfgang Reitherman, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but he was pretty much one of the 9 old men who did animations on all the classics that we've gone over, and he also directed one of my other favorites, Sleeping Beauty, so I thought that was really cool.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And he also directed Robin Hood and Winnie the Pooh, which were all really good. The reception-wise, it was actually the 6th highest grossing film of 1963, so when it did come out, it fared pretty well.
Fared pretty well. I'd have to look at what else came out, because number 6... it's weird because I don't know the temperature of that. If Disney released a big tentpole animation film right now and it ended like 6th overall, you might say it didn't do great.
Okay,
because are some films that I have on my list I think that actually numbered even higher, but since then they just don't really get you know, mentioned very much in, in the breadth of these are the classics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's tough to tell because you don't know the temperature of things, right? You know, from one year to the next.
Yeah. So there was an interesting story behind this just with the making of it. It was kind of a competition going on between the story of Sword in the Stone or Chanticleer. I don't know. Have you ever guys ever...
Chanticleer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you ever see... There was an animated film. It wasn't by Disney, actually. And it was about Chanticleer. It was a rooster who crowed. I forgot what the name of the actual movie was, but it was another animated film. But basically, okay. Walt was looking at the concepts and, you know, after a lot of people, including... I'm blanking on his name right now. But a lot of the artists were pushing for Chanticleer, putting a lot of work and effort into it. And okay. then Walt was like, no. We're going with Sword in the Stone. So, kind of like, oh, well. So I thought that was kind of interesting because it did make like a big rivalry in the development room.
Oh, okay. Still came out well, though. And I actually, we'll hop over to our little page. I know that we had a couple of comments that included that film when some people who were on our Facebook page listed theirs.
Yeah.
I know Sword in the Stone was a pretty common one. I'll just ask now, just to save everyone the thing. Is that on anyone else's list?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. No, because if we got crossover, it's fine. I just want to, you know, make sure. And then we'll all go into it at once. Because
like
I know.
Week.
Because I know that there's going to be some crossover on some things.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you're number five, Sword in the Stone.
Yeah. But just one last thing. Sorry.
Go ahead.
The last thing about the film I thought was really interesting, the magician Merlin in it, at one part he goes off to Bermuda and he's wearing like Bermuda shorts or whatever, and I thought that was very similar to how Genie kind of leaves.
Genie.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting
I'm wondering if it's the same outfit.
It is not.
No? Oh, okay.
It's close. Right.
I'm actually surprised it's not the same exact outfit.
It's close, but yeah, I thought it was really funny.
That's cool. Very, very cool. Scott, let's go over to you.
Okay, my number five is Treasure Planet.
That I saw also on people's list this week. I'm really surprised by this one.
Yeah, I just, honestly, myself, when I was growing up, I didn't associate this with Disney very much. You know,
It doesn't feel like a Disney film. Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But it's great.
Yeah, it's a nice updated take on Treasure Island. And I remember when it was coming out in the theaters. I still have the original poster. If you want one, I have like, I think I have like 10.
Nice.
Wow. Because I just took a bunch of them. But yeah, there was a lot of build up to this.
Yeah. Well, that it's like, you know, it's a kind of like a pirate story, but it's more, even more fantasy.
That one, it takes place in space?
Space. Yeah. They're instead of they're riding ships, but they're not on water.
So it was like, it was like pre, Firefly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Again, it's a take on Treasure Island.
No, of course.
You know?
Yeah, it's the same.
But yeah,
okay,
I remember there was like solar sails and stuff like that in that film. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was basically like a treasure hunt. You know, there was a map that they were looking for, you know, whatever the treasure they were looking for. And,
yeah, you know what? I'm the same. I never associate that as a Disney film a lot of times. Whenever I see it, it never comes across to me like one.
Yeah.
There was a couple of films during that time that didn't have what you would call a classic Disney film. It was more adventure films.
Right.
Yeah. I hope I don't kill anyone's list. I'll just say the title of it. Atlantis would fall into that category as well.
Yep. Yeah.
I feel like that happened with a lot of the movies, maybe some of them on our list, that they don't, you know, quote unquote, feel like Disney films. So they don't necessarily get like that, you know,
instant recognition. Maybe.
And appreciation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. I definitely have a couple like that on my list.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, Scott, keep going. If you wanted to,
Oh, no, that was it. It's a good flick. It's, you know, it's something to watch. Definitely a good, like, adventure. There's a lot of action in it, so.
And I think that's, you know what? I don't even know if that's available on Blu-ray.
I have it.
I think, I think it is on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, all right. Very nice.
That was when a couple of years ago, and I was like, this is Disney? Picking it up.
On the surface, I would say Fox Animation.
Yeah, me too.
Because that was really kind of like their thing during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you know what? It was Fox Animation, but I think I always kind of got it confused with the one with Matt Damon, Titan A.E.
Yes.
Had a similar look to it, I think. In my head, it does. I don't know if it did.
Because it was one of the earliest animation films. Well, not earliest, but one of those animation films that mixed early CG
with
hand-drawn. But the CG looks really CG.
Yeah.
And the hand-drawn, it looks, you know, like it's in a separate plane of existence. They don't mix very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that was a Fox film.
That well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what correctly. I thought. Yeah, I think so.
That was a Fox film. Yeah. So, okay, my number five is Fantasia 2000.
Nice.
This was a thing that was supposed to be something that occurred every, I don't know, decade or so. Mm-hmm. The original plan for Fantasia was that it would re-release and re-release with different sequences and some older sequences. And it never happened from 1940 all the way up to the year 2000, which is when Fantasia 2000 came out. So this was a big thing for Roy Disney to put out. And I remember I saw this on the IMAX screen. And I want to say this is the first feature-length film I ever saw on an IMAX screen. Before that, it was always like these 45-minute 3D things like Walking with Dinosaurs or whatever it was called, Dinosaur 3D. And they, you know, they would have like no plot. It would just be because you were going to see the 3D. And I remember the 3D helmets back then, they were huge. Like they were helmets. But I went to see Fantasia on the IMAX screen. It was a great experience and has some of my favorite moments. The Firebird suite for me is one my favorite sequence in that film. The sprite character is someone that I've always wanted to get art for. But she's not in a lot. And what she's in is usually very expensive.
Yeah.
What's the statues?
The Armani statue.
The Armani statue. I'll get that one of these days. Luckily, that one doesn't inflate in price too much the way like your Sleeping Beauty has gone up in price so much.
I think there was just a blanket inflation because he passed away. But I think, yeah, yours
that
didn't
one's
go
in
as,
a normal. Yeah, it's in a normal, well, quote unquote. It's like maybe $600-$700.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Which is not bad compared to the other ones. I was always a huge fan of seeing the Sorcerer's Apprentice again, obviously, was a lot of fun. But the Rhapsody in Blue was the other real standout to me based on George Gershwin's music and then based on Al Hirschfeld's art. It's really, for me, it's a big love letter to New York City. And just to give you an idea of how little this film did get recognized, it had a $80 million budget. It made $60 domestically.
Wow.
So it was a bomb. They also didn't release it like major, you know, but people just did not go to see it either.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
made 90 million worldwide, I believe. So it only made 30 or so overseas. Or I could be having that wrong. Maybe it was a total of 150. I'm not sure. But yeah, it only made 60 million domestic. So this movie came and went without much fanfare. It lives in the shadow of its predecessor, of course.
Yeah.
And now they've never done one again. And now it's been 15 years, and I don't see any well, I guess 16. I don't see any reason that it's ever going to come up again. So my number five is Fantasia 2000.
Great. My number five is Robin Hood from 1973. Now, as a kid, this was my favorite Disney movie. As a really young kid, I remember my mom still tells me that I basically wore out the VHS tape of this because I would watch it 3-4 times a day.
Yeah.
It was your Frozen.
It was my Frozen, exactly. people don't know, but it tells the story of Robin Hood, but with animals. Robin Hood's a fox. Little John is a bear, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Little John is a bear. Prince John is a lion.
Yeah.
And he's a great villain.
Yeah.
This is kind of a theme that I've found through my things. I kind of have a thing for good villains.
Because
most of my things, I'm like, great villain.
Yeah, I've noticed that on mine too, actually.
But Prince John is great. He's kind of like a cowardly lion. It's good.
I love it. He's like sucking his thumb and stuff.
Yeah, he's sucking his thumb and stuff. And it's very fun. It's very charming. The songs in it are really good. Odalali. That's a great, you know, just it's very catchy.
Yeah.
The big thing with this movie, and I did not know this actually until Pete pointed this out to me a few years ago, is that Robin Hood was it had such a low budget that they reused a lot of the animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple of the dance scenes are lifted straight from Jungle Book, I believe it was.
And Snow White.
The part in particular with Maid Marian. Dancing. It's the Snow White dopey scene.
Yeah.
And if you look, Little John looks like Baloo from Jungle Book.
Yeah.
You know, like everything, and the movements and everything. And if you YouTube it, you'll see. There's YouTube videos that show all the, you know, how they reuse the animation and everything. But even with that, it's not the greatest looking Disney movie, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. And it's one, again, that I don't think a lot of people would even associate with Disney, or unless you grew up with it, you wouldn't even know it's a Disney movie.
It's yeah. it's not one that gets any fanfare.
Not any fanfare at all. And I think it's something people should check out. It's a fun movie, and it's a nice introduction to kids to Robin Hood, which is, you know, a classic tale. It's been retold many, many times.
Yep. Yeah, and that was another film that we saw a lot on our page.
I almost put this on my list. It was.
I'm surprised that you didn't say, "Oh, I have that on my list."
It was between this and Sword in the Stone. I knew Brian would take it, and I really do love Sword in the Stone also. But yeah, they have that same type of like almost like sketchy animation. Like the lines aren't very fine. They almost have like a sketched quality to them.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
No. I was just saying that similarity. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's. I mean, it's funny. It's a funny Disney movie.
Yeah.
Especially the scene where they're at the tournament.
Yeah,
and,
with the hat.
With a hat, and Little John's dressed up like the woman with the coconuts or whatever he had.
And that's currently out on Blu-ray also.
It is, I have it, yes.
And that you can get for pretty cheap,
you
I want
to say.
You can
get it cheap, yeah.
On Amazon, I want to say it's probably like $15,
yeah,
maybe
definitely.
20.
That was one of those ones I bought it as soon as it came out.
Yeah.
Like, we should get that one.
I like it.
We should get that. We haven't gotten a couple of those 70s, 80s films because they honestly scare me.
I love them
it's
all,
like
though.
The dark times. It really is. It's such a weird time for the company.
Yeah.
Wow, we got through our number fives and no one had the same answer. I know that won't continue.
No way.
Melissa, do you want to go on to your number four?
Yeah.
Or do you want to pass?
No.
Do you want to phone a friend?
Okay.
No, phone a friend. The next one on my list, my number four, was Oliver and Company. Another one from my childhood. I absolutely love this one. The music in it is fabulous. I don't know how many of you guys know it.
Billy Joel.
Yeah, Billy Joel is Dodger the dog, and actually Joey Lawrence is the cat, the little kitten.
Is Billy Joel drunk, though?
Maybe.
Yes.
He better be.
I remember I had the little Dodger and Oliver ornaments for my Christmas tree for a very long time. I might still actually have them. I'll have to check.
Hey, find those before we go.
Yeah. I just love them. I mean, the voices, you know, besides Billy Joel and Joey Lawrence, you had Cheech Marin, who was a
little that makes sense.
Chihuahua.
Yeah.
you had, where's her name? Bette Midler was in it. There were a couple that I didn't know, but Dom DeLuise was, of course, like, you know, the mob guy.
Good.
So he was in there. but yeah, I'm sure there's other names that you might know.
Well, do you want to read them?
Richard Mulligan.
Yes.
Oh, Roscoe Lee Brown. I don't know if you know him.
I'm not sure of that name.
There was another woman, Cheryl Lee Ralph. Her singing voice, though, was Ruth Pointer from the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, cool.
So I thought that was pretty cool. And Robert Loggia? Loggia?
Robert Loggia.
Loggia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, we might have an idea who he is.
I crushed Pete's heart a little bit.
Oh, good. You know what? No, it's okay. I understand if you don't know who Robert Loggia is. I'm just going to cry incessantly. I mean, just not even don't throw it to Stone Hands. Nothing. You never saw Scarface?
No.
Don't see Scarface after watching Oliver and Company. Maybe that's a weird...
That's not a good combo.
It's a weird... Yeah,
yeah, that's not a double feature you want to be in on.
You know Robert Loggia. He's from Big. He was the guy who won the Toy Story. He was the piano with Toy Thompson. I was so close to saying Tom Sawyer. Like four times
I heard that.
Just then. Yeah, that was Tom Sawyer I kept wanting to say. Again, wow. Not on anyone else's list.
No.
Wow, this
no,
is
this
weird.
Is good.
This is great.
Wow, well done.
All right.
I think the age difference helps.
Yeah.
I think it definitely helps because I'm going to tell you right now, never seen Oliver and Company.
I never have either.
I just know that Billy Joel is in it, and that is so damn weird to me.
The music in it is so good, and I would love to watch it with you because I'd love to get your reaction on it. Because I do think, you know, I know it's from my childhood, but I do really like it. And actually, this film was what prompted... the vice president of animation, Peter Schneider, to say, we're going to put out an animated film every year. And the next year was Little Mermaid. So.
Oh, okay. So that was 88 then?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Scott, number four.
My number four. I went with this based on influence in the parks.
Go ahead.
101 Dalmatians.
I 100% agree. It almost made my list for that exact reason.
Yes. I mean, granted... Cruella de Vil is in a couple of the shows.
The villain show that happens once a year. Yeah, that doesn't count.
Well, no, she's in Fantasmic.
Oh, yeah.
In the water
scenes. Okay.
Yes. But that's it.
That's it.
Oh, yeah.
You get nothing else. No, but I mean, like, if you ask somebody right now, do you know who Pongo is?
I don't know. I don't think that answer. I don't think you're going to get a good answer a lot of times.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And but yeah, it was. I don't think so. It was considered one of the classics. You know.
Yeah, back and in... it had a very popular remake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Live action remake. So it's actually two films.
Right.
That are that like still you. There's nothing in the parks. There's really it's a well. There's a bare minimum.
Right.
Yeah.
For a film that. When I think of it, I definitely think of Disney immediately.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it is one of those films.
Which is one of the weird things.
Disney, the film, yeah.
Because, you know, the way that I think that Disney does it is the more popular something is, the more they put it in the parks.
Yeah, that's,
but,
yeah.
You know, that is the... makes sense.
That is just, well, what year did that come out? Do you
62?
Have that?
62.
62, okay.
61.
So, you know.
Yeah, 1961.
I don't know. I wonder if back then, if it did get somewhat of a decent park presence and it just didn't stick, you know, like some other films on my list where they were seen in the park a fair amount, but then they just kind of went away.
Yeah.
You know, but it could have been like that. So, once again, I want to say, nothing?
Nothing, no.
No matches.
I have a feeling until we get a little higher up, then I think I know we're hitting
still,
at
I'm
least
still, one. I'm still impressed.
I am impressed also. No, I am.
Okay, my number four film, you know, Brian was saying before, villain, you know, villains. This is, no, don't worry, it's not that one yet. Okay. I know exactly the one you're referring to. It's not that yet. Shan Yu, I thought, was one of the scariest Disney villains of all time. And I love Mulan. And I don't think, besides a character meet, it's even mentioned in those parks.
No. And besides the having the dragon in the art Mushu. Of animation, Mushu.
But he's no longer there.
But no, yeah, but he was the only other thing I could think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was came out in 1988. Really, for me, it's just 1998, sorry.
Yeah.
One of the most forgotten films with... Everyone makes a big deal now about, oh, these films are coming out where these women are these really powerful characters. It's like, it kind of happened a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Just no one went to go see those movies before. It has happened.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, no one really cared. And everyone knows, you know, now Ming-Na Wen is so popular for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might forget she was Mulan. She even
I
voices...
didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah, that's Mulan.
She voiced it?
Yeah, Mei is Mulan.
What?
And then her
and Mulan
singing...
is Mei. No,
and her singing voice is Lea Salongo, who also is the voice of Jasmine, who maybe everyone might know from, you know, Les Mis and Madame Butterfly. Not Madame Butterfly.
Yeah.
Was it Madame Butterfly?
No. Oh, no, was it King and I?
No. What's the...
I thought it was Madame Butterfly.
Nah, I don't believe so. I can't think of it.
That's right.
So anyways, yeah, that's, you know, that is her. And this was Eddie Murphy is Mushu. Mm-hmm. And he would, I mean, look, this is what I literally had to write down. He would later reprise that role in Shrek. He just happened to be a donkey character. It's the same,
it's the same exact character.
Mm-hmm. But this is the first place where he did it.
Yes. I feel like it works better here. I don't know if it's because it's like the looser animation of the dragon. Like, I don't know. I like Mushu versus Donkey.
Also, Donkey was in four films, and by like the third one, I had enough of that character.
Yeah, that was
my thing.
Halfway through the second,
yeah, even the second. Actually, I love the second half of that film. It's nuts, but yeah, this was, you know. But when I tell you this now, it made over $300 million.
Oh wow!
183 of that was overseas.
Overseas, yeah.
That.
Because it hit the overseas market immensely huge. It just didn't really do much over here. And this was during that, I would say, these heroes and heroines kind of period of Disney where it was mm-hmm. Mulan and some other film that we might hear of later and Pocahontas and stuff. You know, this is, it did pretty well.
It did. And, you know, I love that movie.
I love it. The animation in that film was one of the first DVDs I ever bought,
mm-hmm.
and I could not wait to watch it.
Man.
And it just looks gorgeous.
I love the song.
Yeah.
You know, Man Out of You, is that the name? I don't know if that's the name
of
the song.
Yeah, Make a Man Out of
You. You know, that whole sequence is just so good.
That's a good soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, I love the Reflection song. I even like Christina Aguilera's cover of it.
You know, they say, like, the reason that that song didn't take off
mm-hmm.
when it was released as a single was one of the reasons why the film in the States didn't take off as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of times those are tied to each other.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
if the song
true.
Booms, the film booms, and that song, for whatever reason, didn't actually go very well. It didn't do as much as they wanted.
Yeah, I'm surprised too, because it's a great song. It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Beautiful song. Yeah.
Beautiful song.
I mean, it's not.
Speaking of beautiful songs,
it's not Colors of the Wind, but.
If anybody put Pocahontas on their list as a joke.
Number one.
All right.
All right, so that is my number four, 1998's Mulan. Brian.
My number four, speaking of strong female leads, we're going to go with 2009's Princess and the Frog. Now, this...
Finally. It's my number three.
Oh, okay, excellent. Yep. This is a movie. I thought of this, and I'm not positive if it's true, but I can't think of anything else.
Go for it.
This is the first... she's the first black princess.
Yes.
And she's the first American princess.
You could technically say that Pocahontas was because she's Native American, but I don't know how... deep you want to go.
Oh, they consider her a princess. That's right.
There was a time where everybody was a princess, even Tinkerbell, and then they started doing the fairy thing. So it depends. But yes, Pocahontas's father was the chief, so I think she was considered a princess.
Okay.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I mean. Like, it wasn't like anything official, but I'm like, I was trying to think in my head, and I couldn't think of any other American princesses.
They've never had like a ceremony for her or anything like they recently did with Merida. That I remember anyway.
No,
I think they just started doing that because then they did it with Anna and Elsa too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's set in New Orleans, which was a great setting for an animation film. It's beautiful. And she's a strong female lead. Yeah. You know, she works hard. She wants to open up her own restaurant, be her own boss. And
she works too hard.
She works overly
hard.
One of
her flaws is that she doesn't take a moment to actually live life.
Yes.
You know, like, that's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. The animation in that, I don't know. There's just something about the animation in Princess and the Frog. I think it's some of the best that I've seen from Disney.
Yeah, and I don't know if you have this written down, but this was actually their first hand-drawn animated feature in 5 years. Its predecessor was the highly forgettable 2004's Home on the Range. So this was a return to hand-drawn animation when there was, you know, the closing of the animation studio in between that, and many thought, oh, wow, that's the end of an era.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they brought in, Ron Clements and John Musker, who were behind, Little Mermaid and Aladdin, and they came up with Princess and the Frog. An idea that was stirring around that place for a long time.
Yeah.
But I know you. I want to just say that the opening song with Dr. John singing it, this was all done by Randy Newman, of course. But Dr. John singing the track that opens your film that's in New Orleans is really sharp. He's just got that great voice, and I think it's a great song. But let's talk about what I think you really want to talk about.
Dr. Facilier?
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know. Going through my list, it's like villain, villain, villain. Dr. Facilier, he is one of the best villains that they've ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, it's voiced by Keith David. So right there, that's just that voice. It's one of those voices you hear and you're like, yeah, that's Keith David.
fight a war with him in Halo.
Yeah. His song, Friends from the Other Side. What, probably, besides Gaston is my favorite villain of all time. Mm-hmm. That's not on my list as an underrated movie, just so you guys know. Gaston is my favorite villain of all time. And besides his song, I gotta say, I think this is my number two villain song.
That's my number one villain song.
Yeah. If it wasn't for Gaston, it would be. But yeah. I love that character so much.
And the animation in that sequence in particular, when it goes like the day glow.
Yeah.
When it goes all, glow in the dark stuff. And
yeah.
The
yeah, it goes really 90s going college into... dorm. Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, really it awesome.
Good. Put like a corn poster up on
exactly,
my wall.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so they used to get the bottle, clear bottles, yeah. And you would put water in there, and you'd take the marker in there, and you'd shake it off.
Yeah, the highlighter.
That was basically what that scene was, and it's fantastic. And the songs...
absolutely something a lot of people did.
No, I did, definitely. And that soundtrack is just all around great. There's that song, the opening song, like Pete said, When We're Human, is one of the funnest, fun songs that they do. It's just a great all-around movie, and I don't think a lot of people... even have seen it.
Yeah. I feel like it got bypassed so quickly by Tangled and then Frozen. I feel like it should have been, I don't know, I feel like it should have been put up more. I wish they would still do the thing in Disney with the riverboat.
Oh, Tiana's Showboat Jubilee.
Showboat Jubilee, yeah. Yes.
Yes, that was, I have this on here as one of my lists. One of my favorite shows that I've ever seen in Magic Kingdom. And I'm not a big person for stage shows.
No, but
this is a stage show, even if it's on a riverboat, it's a stage show. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It brought life to Frontierland, that whole area back there, into Liberty, you know, Liberty Square.
Yeah, well, there's really nothing going on back there.
Yeah, there's usually not a whole lot going on back there. It's a pretty quiet-ish area.
Yeah.
And I thought that this was an absolutely fantastic show. The music, the vibe of it was just, it was exciting.
It I feel like it, like, this movie captured what, like, the essence of New Orleans, I think, and that's pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, way too much history, so I gotta just put that aside.
Oh, yes. No, 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 no. I meant in terms of, you know.
I have some interesting numbers on this, because, it kind of speaks towards, sometimes things just don't hit with domestic audiences. Budget of $105 million. Domestic gross, $104.
Wow.
Which, for a Disney film, is abysmal.
Yeah.
That is abysmal.
I don't know why it didn't do so well.
That is a conversation I don't want to have on this show. I'll have it on the other one.
Okay.
Because there's a really big reason why it didn't do well.
Silly.
And it has to do with the same people who complained about certain characters in The Hunger Games.
Meh.
And with a casting decision recently with a Harry Potter stage show, it goes to a much darker place into why it didn't do as well. It only made $267 overall. So it made, it did a little better overseas, but not when you compare, like, the number of people who had a chance to see it as opposed to here. So it just didn't hit. And in a time when it was CG or bust, it went bust. Mm. And if anyone's noticed, there hasn't been a whole lot since then.
No.
Hand-drawn animation. I don't know if something's in the works. I really don't know. But
is Moana hand-drawn?
Moana seems like it is, but I believe that it is, like, in the style of, you know, maybe Lilo and Stitchish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure, though. Okay. I did not see that trailer, and I try to stay away from, you know, knowing too much, but I really do not know. It very, very well might be. While someone else is talking, I will actually look that up.
Okay.
So,
yeah, because that Princess and the Frog, it actually reminds me of the art style of, like, Beauty and the Beast. You know, also with her gown, you know, being the very big ball gown.
Yeah, it is a beautifully traditional Disney animated film.
Or even Cinderella.
So that is my number three, and that, Brian, that was your number four.
Yes.
Melissa, what is your number three now, correct?
Yep. Okay. I'm actually going to go a little newer. I'm going to go with 2007 Meet the Robinsons.
That's my number three also.
Oh, cool.
That's my number two.
Yeah, I feel like this one is one that does get bypassed a lot. There's music in it, but it's
insanely bypassed.
No, I don't even. Other than us, I don't know of anybody that's seen the movie.
Yeah,
honestly, like, if I talk to people, they have no idea what it is.
I would love to find out, like, from our listeners and stuff, like, if you've actually seen this movie, and if you haven't, you definitely should, because it is so emotionally ranged. You know, from laughter to sadness to everything.
Yeah, it's got a great story. It's,
produced by John Lasseter and Dorothy McKim. Dorothy McKim also produced Prep and Landing, The Ballad of Nessie short, Get a Horse short. So she's a big part of it. Interestingly enough, the director, he was the story supervisor for Emperor's New Groove and Brother Bear.
Okay.
And he also went on to co-direct the new Winnie the Pooh movie.
Okay.
So fairly decent.
Something else with him. A little interesting note. He's the voice of Bowler Hat Guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Great villain.
He is, yeah. He's the voice of Bowler Hat Guy, where that character did not exist when this film was first being put together. I'm sorry. Do you have this in your stuff?
You can go ahead.
Okay. They started production on this in 2004.
Yeah, it went through.
It went through a lot of changes because basically in between that time, Pixar became part of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Lasseter was put in charge of animation. He saw a rough cut of this film and said, this isn't working. You need to rework your bad guy number one. And it was from that Bowler Hat Guy was created, and then the director, Steven Anderson, actually voiced him.
I love this villain.
Okay, the movie's fine up until Bowler Hat Guy comes in. It's okay. There's some good parts, but you're like, all right, we're moving along.
It's generic. Yeah.
The Bowler Hat Guy, and then meeting the family, makes this film out of this world, in my opinion. This is really unlike especially when you get to the family and they go into, like, these different genres of film.
Yeah.
There's like a kung fu, like, riff.
Yeah.
And it's hysterical. That for me was when this movie went from okay to bonkers. And when it went bonkers, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't. Do you want to talk about?
Yeah, it's the biggest, best joke ever, both literally and figuratively.
Yes.
With the when, because the basic concept of all this is that there's two time machines, so you have to bring back a dinosaur.
Yes.
Have to bring back a dinosaur, and you have to mind control him, and you have to make him try and grab somebody with his little arms, but he can't because he has a big head. He's stuck in a corner.
And he says it out loud.
And he says it out loud.
It's too big.
A big head, little arms. This wasn't a well-conceived plan.
And that was like the running joke. This wasn't a well-conceived plan. It's said like, I think, two or three times throughout the film.
Yeah.
And I love this. I
it has
this
a great twist.
3D.
Yeah.
Has that great, like, it's not really a twist, but you know what I mean. When you find out who Bold Hack Guy is, that's really cool.
Yeah, I thought
or
that was really
who
cool.
Who the family is. You know, like,
exactly.
A phenomenal cameo by Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which really sticks out.
I have a note Frog Jazz Band. They were awesome.
Oh my God, I forgot about them. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. That was a great musical number. I mean, there's just the whole musical, it's like a musical number in the middle of the movie.
This is a movie built around a Walt quote.
Yeah, does always make me tear up at the end.
It does.
Because this movie is a baller for me. I cry all the time with this movie.
You know, when they went at the keep moving forward thing, I remember when I heard someone say that, I was like, oh! Oh my God, they're actually, I don't know why, I feel, you know, they've done it a little more recently, but direct references to Walt don't seem to happen. For a long time, it didn't happen. And this was one of those moments when that popped, I was like, whoa, what just, did they actually, they're going right there, huh? Yeah. Great.
And then you got the reintroduction of Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, which I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was so much fun.
So much fun. So much fun. And it's an adult story. Yeah. It is not. This is really not a kid's story for the most part. But it's a kid's enjoy it. But this is one of those movies that very entertaining for adults and for kids. You know, it deals with adoption. It deals with lots of emotional.
Candles really hanging in the air.
I know. A lot of strong emotional issues that they cover in this.
Yeah.
And the end, like I said, that end of that movie just gets me
every time.
This feels like you. It's a couple of steps away from being a Pixar film.
Yeah.
That was what I, you know, actually like looking back at it a little bit. It gives me a Pixar sort of vibe.
Yeah. The grandfather in that is hysterical. He's my favorite character.
I love the whole family.
Yeah. He's got like the big glasses, the bulgy eyes, and he's always like.
When we actually meet the Robinsons, I just absolutely love it. So, okay, very good. So that was your number three.
Yeah.
My number two. Brian's number three.
Yeah. My number three.
Your number three.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, just knocked that category out. All right.
All righty then. So, Scott, what do you have? I'm sorry. Your number five was?
Treasure Planet.
And number four was?
101 Dalmatians.
So your number three was Meet the Robinsons.
Yes.
Do you want to go to your number two?
Sure.
Yeah, go to your number two.
My number two is Hercules.
Mm. This was going to make my list. It didn't.
I am shocked that it's not on your list.
I know.
I thought it was going to be
kept
two.
It off the list because I had a feeling you were putting it on.
Yeah,
well, that worked.
But
it was good.
Once again, like Brian said, one of my favorite villains 100%. Of all time.
Yep.
Yeah,
and I mean it's not really a new story, but it is. You know what I mean?
It's because it's nothing like the actual Hercules
story.
So,
yeah. But it takes the premise of Hercules, but it puts its own love story type twist on it.
Yeah.
But once again, I took a lot of this as what I would like to see recognized in the parks. And this is another one that I think would be a huge hit, but it's really not. It's not given its rightful place, I think.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would say out of the movies that we listed so far, Princess and the Frog has the most because Tiana has a meetup.
Yes.
Meet and greet. That's it. You know, that's it.
Yeah. I would love
and
to see
Mulan
a Megara
meetup.
I
would love to see a Megara meetup.
Meg.
In a real flight.
I'm sorry, Scott. Go keep going.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great. The characters are great. Phil is.
Yeah, voiced by Danny DeVito. He's
Phil is one of my favorite characters in that.
And he looks just like Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
It really is. It's good animation.
It's funny. The fact that a lot of the things, even when we did the Fantasia review, how a lot of the things that they did in Hercules looked like Fantasia, it had a very, very Disney
feel. Oh, yeah, we did bring, that's right.
Yeah,
that
and
up.
Even the animation on Hercules himself and the other characters was very Disney-esque, I feel. But a lot of times when you ask people about it, you know.
Well, this was another film that they took the music in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. I love the music.
I want to say, what year is this? I'm sorry.
That's a good question. 98.
Is it the tail end of the Golden movies? I think.
Yeah.
You know, that 97. Renaissance.
Okay. Well, in 97. I want to say En Vogue was still one of the biggest bands, one of the biggest groups, one of the biggest musical acts.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, this was a big, even Boys to Men.
Yeah, this was during the 90s hip-hop era. Yeah, so
the
90s
hip-hop and a lot of R&B, that, you know, a lot of, you know, groups, a lot of just singing groups. It was kind of like a weird revert to like the 60s. You know, 60s and 70s really were like the Motown swing and all that. So they implemented that into this film where you would think Hercules film, Motown soundtrack, this doesn't work, but it works seamlessly. I really think it's great.
The Gospel Truth is great.
Actually, Meg's song, I Won't Say I'm in Love, is one of my favorite Disney songs.
Yeah, that is. That's a great song.
And, you know, it's Michael Bolton.
Yep.
Michael Bolton.
He sings the Meg song?
And Rip Torn.
No, he sings
Rip Torn.
I know. I was joking.
Rip Torn is Zeus.
Yes.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
But you want to talk about Pain and Panic.
Woods.
Okay, you know what? We'll save the cream for the top. You want to talk about Pain and Panic? You're a huge Pain and Panic person.
I love them so much. Yeah. I can't. I mean, besides the fact that I love this movie in general, and me and my sister watched it so many times in the theater alone, let alone on DVD. But yeah, the Pain and Panic duo, we quoted "If is good" so many times, I don't even know. I still do it to myself sometimes.
And big that was Bobcat Goldthwait fan, huh?
Yeah, Bobcat Goldthwait and Matt Frewer. Actually, Bobcat Goldthwait, you really might not know, he does a lot of directing work.
Yeah, I had seen a lot of directing work. Yeah.
And he put out an incredible documentary this year that's a dark subject. But he's getting a lot of attention for it, and I think you might hear his name strangely come up during
the Oscars.
That will
be very weird. That's probably something you would have never thought during Police Academy.
Yeah,
days.
But I think he was directing the Jimmy Kimmel Show for a while, or he still does and then. Yeah, I want to say he was doing that for a while.
Yeah.
So, but the real, in my opinion, the real diamond in this movie is James Woods.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And we've probably all heard the story, you know, 100 times about how he got the job. There were people coming in and, you know, like, I am Hades, you know, and stuff like that. And James Woods was like, I am Hades.
No, he did it more funny. Like, hey, I'm Hades.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. But, like, he was just
He sounds like James Woods. Yeah, he sounds like James Woods.
You know, an over-hyper James Woods.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's how he got that role. And it's phenomenal. It's the standout thing to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I care about that movie as much.
Oh yeah,
without James Woods,
yeah,
I don't know if I care, because I really don't care about Hercules.
Yeah, like, yeah. I agree. If without James Woods, I don't think that
the character
it's
of Hercules
same.
Himself, I don't really care about him.
Yeah, it's one of those rare films where the main characters are not the main characters in most people's eyes.
Yeah. Meg has a lot of, you know, better moments really than Hercules.
Yeah,
she's a more interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
Hades is infinitely more interesting.
Yeah.
Even Pain and Panic, I would put above, like, oh, cool, they were on screen.
Yeah,
like,
even...
maybe that's why this movie didn't do that well. Yeah. Now I'm starting to think about it.
I mean, you know, Phil's got better. Phil has more growth. Hercules is basically Hercules the whole time through.
Yeah, he's kind of white bread.
Yeah, yeah.
He's really white bread is what he is. So...
I like the animation difference that they make between, like, the humans and the gods, how the gods have, like, that glow around them and stuff.
Yeah,
they do it really well.
Gorgeous effect, too. Yeah. Really gorgeous effect. Yeah. That I don't know why my brain remembers stupid things like that, but I remember when I bought that DVD, I was like, ooh, look at the colors. You know? So if that did it, you know, it's a pretty good indicator. But, I mean, Scott, what would, like, your favorite part of this movie be?
Oof. I would probably say the first. Actually, my favorite part is when he fights the serpent,
the Hydra.
No, the Hydra.
Okay.
Oh, he keeps cutting the heads off.
Yeah, and then like all the people in the town are like watching, and then he finally kills it, and they're all like dead silent, and they're just like, yeah. Like, you know, he became, like, you know, the hero.
And they were, like, critiquing him first, right?
Yeah.
And it was like the internet age.
And it was funny because then, like, after that, they had, like, a whole little scene of him and how they made action figures of him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool that they kind of, like, you know, showed showed that growth.
Very but, cool. So yeah. Again, now that was your number two.
That was my number two. Number three was Meet the Robinsons.
Okay, my list has been obliterated because my number three was Princess and the Frog. Excuse me. It's like a seance room in here. My number two is Meet the Robinsons. And I mean, I only have one left. Brian, how many do you have left on your list?
I have two left.
Why don't you do your number two?
Okay. Yeah, because I have a feeling our number ones are the same.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we all do. Yeah.
All right. Well, my number two is a movie that literally saved Disney animation. Nice. 1986 is The Great Mouse Detective. This film was a big success. And it came right after Black Cauldron, which was
a bomb.
A bomb is putting it kindly.
Yeah.
And Michael Eisner is the one, right, who just taken over Disney Animation?
Right around that time, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, if this movie wasn't a success, they were going to close up shop. You know, there's I mean, you know, that's what the talk is that's what would have happened. But the film was a critical success and made a profit and really kind of led the way for the golden age of this, you know, Little Mermaid, Lion King, mm-hmm. Beauty and the Beast, all those films. But so this was one of those movies that was a success at the time and was good, but since then has fallen into like obscurity for the most part. I feel like a lot of people don't even know that it's a Disney film. Vincent Price is the bad guy. That's all you need to know.
It's pretty good.
Okay. It's pretty good. It's Vincent Price. And he just sells it the whole time. He is fantastic. His name is Radigan. He's a rat, of course. And Sherlock Holmes. It's basically Sherlock Holmes is what this is. It's an introduction. You know, it's Sherlock Holmes with mice, and a little appearance of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson's shadows make an appearance, but that's about it in the movie. It's really a good movie. It's another one of those ones that's kind of adult in the fact that they let it play out like a mystery, mm-hmm. like an actual Sherlock Holmes, you know, show would.
This isn't a musical, right?
No.
I'm going to tell you right now, I've never seen it.
You will love it.
I feel
you
like absolutely I, love I've it. Always Trust heard it that I would really like
I watched it. I watched it as a kid, and then I'm like, you know, I haven't watched it since it was 86, so I was 10 at the time. I remember watching it then, but I really hadn't watched it. And then I was flipping through something, and it was on. And I was like, oh, it looks like Sherlock Holmes with mice, and it's Disney. I'm like, let me watch this again. And I loved it.
Our friend Mike loves this movie. I think this is like one of his favorite movies. It's a Great Mouse Detective.
No, yeah, this and The Rescuers. I know he's a big Rescuers fan.
Is he? Right?
I think so. He's a big Rescuers fan.
Rescuers fan.
But Great Mouse Detective, I would definitely tell everyone to watch it. It's a great Sherlock Holmes story. And part of the reason why I really enjoyed it is my grandfather was a big Sherlock Holmes fan, so we used to watch Sherlock Holmes together, and I used to read that. You know, he used to read it, and then he would give me the books, and I would read them. So it reminds me of that also. So that's one of the reasons why I like it. But there's a scene at the end. There's the fight scene between Basil is the name of Sherlock Holmes, of the Great Mouse Detective.
Which is a nice reference to Basil Rathbone.
Because he's the one who voices, and he's the one who voices Basil.
Oh, he actually does?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. He does the voice, and Vincent Price, like I said, is Radigan. They have a fight inside Big Ben, and this was one of the first times that they mixed the CG and the animation, and it's really good. It looks really nice, and it's a great fight. It's one of the best Disney fight scenes like that that they have, and it's pretty kind of like an intense little scene, and it's just one of those movies that I think everyone should check out because it has a lot of things. It's a very important movie in Disney history in terms of
what it did to lead the way. To Oliver and Company, like what Melissa was saying, and then comes Little Mermaid.
And then comes Little Mermaid, and then from there.
You know, if you look at a timeline, Brave Little Toaster and Who Framed Roger Rabbit are in between there, but they're not exclusively Disney films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was a Touchstone film and the other, you know, Roger, you know, and Hyperion Pictures.
I mean, I don't know if Disney at the time was separate studios. Like these, I guess, came out on the Walt Disney Animation.
Yeah, there were. That's why. There were like a couple of different wings going on.
I mean, you have to take this for what it is, too. I got that info off of like a Wikipedia, so I'm, you know, they're usually pretty good, but you know, it
I think what maybe more to the effect that it proved that they can make another good film.
Well, yeah, it showed that people were excited
when Oliver and Company came out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Like I said, it was a success at the time. It was a big success for them. It made a good amount of money, but...
Yeah. You know, I was too young for it. I never saw it. But yeah, then a couple years later, I loved Oliver and Company. I think it was the music, with that one.
Yeah, the music in this is not a standout. There's two musical scenes. Rattigan's musical scene is kind of cool, but I don't know if it's because it's cool or it's because Vincent Price is singing it. So it's probably because Vincent Price is singing it. I like Vincent Price.
So we have... I'm sorry, did you have something else?
Oh, no. So that was it. Great Mouse Detective. See it.
Please. Very good.
It's good stuff. Good choice.
So does everyone only have one film left on their list? Melissa, you have another one?
I have my number two.
That's right, because we had to cut some of ours, blah, blah, blah. Yes, number two, Melissa.
Okay, my number two is actually Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. In doing research on this film, this is what kind of made me take Hercules off, because I was between this one and Hercules. But all of the groundbreaking stuff that happened with Atlantis, I was like, I can't leave it out. Also, I really enjoy Atlantis. Like,
it's a fun swashbuckling adventure that I love the movie that it was really, really reminded me of when I watched it. But we'll continue.
What?
It's Castle in the Sky.
Oh, well, yeah. That was
it
one
is
of the...
100% Castle in the Sky.
That was one
but
of
it's
those things.
A good homage to Castle in the Sky. And there's some really funny moments in that film.
Yeah, there's great comedy. There's, I mean, it is Michael J. Fox's voice, so that is a little like...
Because he's Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, because...
You can't, yeah. He,
it's like the Owen Wilson with Cars.
It's exactly, yeah. It's not a character. Yeah. It's Michael J. Fox.
So, I mean, like, that would be like my only real critique. But, I mean, you do get Leonard Nimoy in it, so...
Yep, you do.
That's pretty cool.
You do.
Just, like, to go over some of the stuff that I found out going with this, on the movie, they consulted with Mark Okrand to write the Atlantean language. He was the one who came up with the Klingon language for Star Trek. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Josh Whedon was one of the first writers involved. He quickly left, but he was one of the initial ones.
Doesn't matter. His name's on the thing.
Yeah. a couple other names I thought you would like, which I liked. Mike Mignola was one of the four production designers.
You can actually tell. You can see. For those who don't know, Mike Mignola is the creator and artist many a times and writer for Hellboy. And Hellboy has a very specific look. And if you look at the body shape of these characters in Atlantis, you understand that this is Mike Mignola's thumbprint, you know, in here. And it's a kind of Mignola sort of story.
Yeah.
You know, it fits his interests.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you had other production designers, but their names didn't stand out as much as his did. Matt Codd, Jim Martin, and Richard Delgado. They did. If you look at their IMDb pages, they're, like, concept artists and stuff, but the amount of films that they worked on, from Apocalypto to Hunger Games to Mission Impossible 3, Captain America, Alice in Wonderland, the new one, even Wreck-It Ralph, Star Wars, Clone Wars, I mean, they're all over the place. A lot of awesome movies. The other thing that I thought was great was this was one of the few Disney animated features to be produced and shot on 70mm anamorphic film. And at the time, it was the most CG in any Disney animated film. I do feel like you can tell it's CG, but it's not as cartoony looking as some of the...
It looks pretty good.
It looks pretty seamless.
I think it's held up pretty well.
Yeah, I think... Because I just watched it a few months ago, and I still think it was great. And the person who did the score, James Newton Howard, he has done a lot. So look up his IMDb page. You want me to read them? I'll read them. I have
just like one or two. You don't have to do 50.
Well, I have. It starts with Pretty Woman. Then you have King Kong, the newer one, Batman Begins, Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight trilogy.
Hunger Games also.
Do you know who else is in this? It's very important.
Boy's Wife?
Yeah.
Well, I have them all.
Father Guido Sodigi. Who I know you don't know who that is when I say that. But Don Novello is Father Guido Sodigi.
I have him.
Is he him in the movie? Like, does he talk?
100% Father Guido Sodigi.
I've never seen
and
Atlantis.
He's not wearing the hat, but he may as well be. Yeah, he 100% is Father Guido Sodigi, and it's fantastic. Whenever he speaks, I just instantly laugh. And I like, you know, our villain here is James Gardner, and he just passed recently. So I always love seeing James Gardner and stuff. One of my favorite actors ever, pretty much. And Jim Varney.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Also, and he also, you know, recently passed. Leonard Nimoy recently passed. John Mahoney recently passed. My God, someone this make show. Sure Don DeVello's okay.
Yes.
Jesus. Everyone's dying. So, anyways. Yeah. Of course, Jim Cummings is in this. Somewhere. He's got a voice in there somewhere.
Of course, yeah.
He's in every movie that we talked about, I'm sure. So, oh, that's a surprising pick. Okay, number two, Atlantis.
It's beautiful. It has a really, you know, nice female. She's not, you know, dependent on the guy. So I mm-hmm. like that. And it's the Atlantean, you know, world is yeah. very beautiful. And I like that type of mythology stuff. And just because of all the other impact that it had, that, you know, it was, I thought it was great. And I do think it is missed by a lot of people.
And that was another film that I remember reading on our Facebook page. I'm going to bring that up before we go, and we'll yeah. just we'll talk yeah, about yeah. a couple of things and whatnot that other people had down there. Scott, you have only one left, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then this is how we'll do this.
Should we each say one word?
That's I was. You know what? I was going to say we'll just. I'm going to count to three, and then one, two, three.
Go.
The title. Okay. Okay? Ready. One, two, three.
Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
Bong.
You know what? A lot of things are based on opinion.
This isn't.
This is actually the correct answer. This is this is the only answer for your number one. We're not going into the pre-production of this film.
Oh, no.
No.
Because that's not an episode. That's a documentary, and they made one. It's called Sweatbox.
Literally
look
a documentary.
It up on YouTube. The movie that you see, that you saw, if you've never seen it, the one that you're going to see, is not the one that was coming at you. It was more of a Lion King, basically. It was Lion King, you know, with people. Actually, it was really, like, you know, the Prince and the Pauper really what it was. But it was going to be this big epic film with music by Sting, which there's still a song by Sting during the credits that makes no sense at all with this movie.
Especially after the opening song.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when Tom Jones opens your track and then like this Sting heartful thing is happening at the end. It makes no sense at all. It's insane. What they came up with, though, was, in my opinion, it's not an opinion. This is the funniest Disney movie.
Yeah.
By leaps and bounds.
All the other ones we talked about, like, they have quotable moments or funny parts. Like, this, like, from start
this
to finish.
This is
like,
Monty Python quotable.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is,
it's Monty Python levels of quotable.
This is, like, two separate road trip comedies happening at the same time. That's what this film is.
Yes, it is. That's good. That's a good way of putting it. So let's just talk about, it starts with the cast.
Yeah.
David Spade, somebody whom I like him in some things. I don't like him in some things. I loved him in this. He plays Cusco, our main character. You got John Goodman, which if you don't appreciate John Goodman, man, you're missing out. You're missing out on one of the great talents that we'll ever see in acting because he's so versatile. We get Eartha Kitt as our villain. And if that doesn't mean a lot to you, that's another thing. Like, you gotta look up how cool Eartha Kitt is. She's Yzma. Probably my, like, okay, Facilia has my favorite villain song.
Yeah.
Yzma is my favorite villain.
Yeah. Also because she's got one of the best henchmen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, that is who I'm going to next. Patrick Warburton as Kronk playing, well, let's be honest, Patrick Warburton and everything.
Yeah.
But
if you don't know who Patrick Warburton is, if you go ever ridden Soarin', He is the flight instructor guy who talks to you before you board.
And Putty from Seinfeld.
And Putty from Seinfeld,
Know him. And actually, if you didn't see him on Soarin', as of yesterday, you may never see him on that again.
Him and David Spade are also in that TV show.
Yeah, but...
Radio?
Rules of Engagement, it's called,
Oh, that's a show now?
Yeah.
I don't watch TV.
Well, I don't even... Yeah.
I used to watch it. It was pretty funny.
And for you, you know what? If anyone's ever listened to the Film Basement, you've heard us talk about Dream On. And Wendy Malick plays Goodman's wife, also known from Dream On as Judith. Which, Judith, I don't know. You're either loving it at that moment right now, or you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. I saw this in the movie theater with a couple of friends. We had no idea what this movie was. And left crying laughing.
Yeah.
Crying laughing. I don't understand how there isn't a Yzma's water slide ride or something.
Yeah.
In the parks.
I read one of the best reviews. It was a cast member from the Disney Fantasy. Okay. They have a different type of loading system for the aqueduct. You actually stand up in it, and the cast member pushes a button, and it's a body slide.
Oh, so my God. That's even better.
A guest in there says, "Bronk, the lava." Oh, and then as she's leaving and going down, she's like, "Bronk, the lava."
Yep. Oh, we got to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're going to be on that boat in 30 days. Boom. Oh, that's assuming that, like, plane doesn't crash and other horrible things that can happen in 30 days.
It's not a blizzard.
Yeah. Blizzard, we're driving. We already spoke about this.
Entire East Coast from Florida to...
That's my concern.
I'll drive through it. I'll drive out a little bit west.
Did you see Hateful Eight? You can't drive through blizzards sometimes.
I don't have to worry about horses.
All right, that's true. That's all right.
Yeah.
Horsepower.
It's true. Horsepower. All six of them. That's what my car has.
All six of them. All six of them.
We leave now. We'll get there on time. Melissa, speak towards Emperor's New Groove a little bit, if you would like.
I don't know what to say about it besides...
All right, Brian, speak towards Emperor's New Groove a little bit, if you like.
Okay. My favorite scene in that movie is Kronk sneaking out Kuskos's body. And he's pretending he's in a spy movie. Trying to sneak the body out. There's just so many great scenes in it.
Melissa, what is the first scene? Like, if I say to you, Emperor's New Groove, what's the first thing you think of scene-wise? Or joke? Is it Lever? It might be Lever.
It's either Lever, or I do like the end with the, "This is my voice?"
Is that my voice?
Because you turned into a cat. That's cute.
Scott? This was your number one also, right?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
so this was a unanimous number one.
Yeah.
Which, look, guys, when we brought up this episode last week, after we were done recording, I said, is Emperor is everyone's number one? And we were like, yeah. I was like, all right, well, hopefully two through five are interesting. So, Scott, if I was to ask you, like, what's your first quotable thing that you think of on Emperor's?
It would be the wrong lever.
Wrong lever? It would be.
But okay. my whole, every time when he turns into a llama... Yeah, that's my favorite scene.
I love the dinner scene with Kronk. Oh my God, Kronk is the best. Oh, yeah. The dinner
spinach
scene.
Puffs.
The spinach puffs.
With the mixing the drinks too.
Yeah. I always remember, I don't know why, near the end when he keeps taking all the different potions. He's like, yay, I'm a llama again. Wait. It's like, I absolutely love it. The one guy turns into a cow.
Can I go home?
He's like, can I go home? Turn to a cow. Like, you're excused. Eartha Kitt is amazing in this film. We lost her just a couple of years ago, or like 2 years ago. I think it's pretty recent. Yzma is the funniest. She's just the funniest villain ever. She's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Jesus, why isn't this represented at all in the parks?
I don't know. It's
at
so
all.
Funny.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a shred of this movie in the parks, correct?
No,
nope.
But I do know over there a couple months ago, Joe Rohde was in Peru for an extended period of time. His Instagram was a lot of Machu Picchu stuff.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, right. I think you're stretching there.
All right, okay.
Maybe he likes it. Maybe he's going to bring it back.
I
probably not.
That wow, yeah, no. I don't think that makes any sense at all. You're crazy.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. If he was looking into... Yeah, why not? Okay, yeah. You know what? There's a new ride coming. Emperor's New Groove.
I mean, is Yzma okay or Kronk around for the Halloween party at all? For, like, you know, when the villains come out to...
Nope.
I've never heard, like, their names or, like, you know,
see,
say,
Yzma,
like...
Yzma, actually, I think that they once did have an Yzma meet.
Maybe at one point, like... But I don't remember in the recent years when we've been going for them, seeing or hearing about her.
Oh, no, because I would have... I don't care if it would have taken 5 hours.
Yeah, yeah. We would have spent the
I
whole
have
party
spent
there.
The time. They have had her meets and Kronk in the parks in the past, but I don't know, guys. If you're listening to this and you've knew that they've been there like within the last year, let us know. Definitely leave a message or something. But yeah, there's so much they could have done with this, and it. You know what though? Guess what? Didn't make any money.
Nope.
You want to know why? People hate David Spade.
They do. But it didn't make money, but it spawned a sequel, which was pretty good, Kronk's New Groove.
And a TV show.
Yeah, which now, was
so
really
it funny. Must have found an audience somewhere in order to do that stuff.
I would say this is the most current cult Disney film.
Yes, I would agree with that.
That got born from, you know, after it had gone and left, because it had a budget of $100 million. Really, because it was in production forever. It only made $89 million domestic.
Oh, wow.
So, remember when I said like 100 and something for Princess and the Frog was garbage?
Yeah.
This was a burning trash.
Yeah, wow.
It only made $169 worldwide.
Oh, $169?
That was
millions of them.
Two people saw it.
Two people. It was all of us twice. But yeah, it only made $169 million worldwide. That is it.
Wow.
What, you feel like, you got like a smirk on your face, woman. What is it?
No. I just, due to the poor reception of it, I actually pulled quotes from critics because I thought they were really funny. And I
wanted. Are they bad?
Yeah.
Oh, let's hear it.
Okay, so.
Good work.
Mark Savlov from The Austin Chronicle. He gave it a 2 out of 5 stars. Noting the film, quote, suffers from a persistent case of narrative backsliding that only serves to make older members of the audiences long for the days of dwarves, beauties, and poisoned apples of Disney's yore, and younger ones squirm in their seats.
And that man's got a hell of a lisp.
That's good.
Shots fired.
Oh, stop yourself. Read
Cross
another
the
one.
Ow.
I, no, one. I thought that was great because...
No, it, that's great. He totally
that's great
missed
because,
the
point. Because yeah. he's...
It's a perfect example. He missed the point utterly.
Yeah.
Because none of us feel that way at all.
No, I don't want
that's
Snow
not,
White.
That wasn't the yeah. purpose of this movie.
That's the thing. Like, I don't want Snow White in every movie. That's it's like people who are fans of a band or whatever in particular, like, oh, it doesn't sound like their first one. It's like, yeah. I
That's
know.
Not, yeah.
I don't want to listen to the first album for 40 years. It's boring after a while. I don't want Snow White Part 12 or Part D. But, you know, I don't want it. This is such a specific film. You know, if it came out now with the internet age,
I think this would
huge.
Blow up.
It would
Memes
be huge.
Galore.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are.
This is.
The quote is such mm-hmm. a quotable film. It comes down to that quality of
this
it.
This is a movie that would be ripe for a re-release out yeah. to theaters now. I think they would make gangbusters
if they put it out in the theater. I'd be there like every week.
Oh yeah,
I would go.
This would be a they can have this and then like the Mighty Python. You know, we're going to the Mighty Python.
Yeah, yeah, we do the Mighty Python.
I would go to a quote along of this.
Oh,
this would be
easily.
A great quote along.
Yeah.
And a sing along.
Yeah,
and a sing along.
Why not? Well, it's got one song in it, but it's great.
But it's good.
And a dance
song, guy.
Yeah,
can we dance to it?
Oh yeah, I can dance to it.
You can dance.
Yeah,
just you get groovy with it.
Just throw it out the window.
I won't get in your way.
Good fan, big fan. That's our number one, guys. It should be yours too. Emperor's New Groove, the funniest Disney film ever produced. You have another one? Let us know. But guess what?
It's not going to win.
It's not. It's Emperor's New Groove. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. That's it, Prisoner Group. Does anyone else have anything to add to this?
Should we just do... I have, like, an honorable mention.
Oh, you have honorees. Yeah, honorables. Yes, yeah. go.
I mean, you guys took most of them, but one we didn't touch on was Lilo and Stitch. I do think that one does get a little... I know Stitch is in the parks, but I know his rides, his attractions aren't that great.
I think that's where the most underappreciated is that that ride is garbage.
But yeah. I also feel like the movie in general, I don't feel like it gets a lot of love.
See, I was tossing that back and forth, but... I feel that this has suffered the opposite of some movies, where some movies hit and then they kind of fade into obscurity. This didn't hit that huge, but has since become extremely popular. Because like you said, Stitch is all over the place in terms of merchandising. He's right outside the World Disney store. They have the ride, which is abysmal, but they still have the ride. There was a TV show again for that. They made a TV show, which is quite funny, actually, because I have a bunch of them taped because Kyle watches it.
Yeah.
That's the reason for me. I feel that it was underappreciated when it came out, but now everyone kind of knows Lilo and Stitch. They have the breakfast at Ohana's, the character breakfast and stuff.
I feel like they know Stitch a lot more than maybe the movie, but I hope it's not true. I hope more people do know.
Well, no, that you know what, that is a good point. I think it might be more Stitch focused, but still.
Well, again, this one didn't get a huge return when it was out in the theaters. It was a production budget of $80 million. Made 145 domestic, but that's not great.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, you did good.
Yeah,
you know, it was
double.
Good. It made 273, so I mean, it actually made less than Mulan.
Yeah.
You know, in the overall scheme of things. But yeah, it's become a huge character. Stitch is a huge character.
I'm looking at the Stitch mug right over there in my cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah. Stitch has become one of the most marketed characters that I can remember. It's like you're saying, I'm not sure though, do all those people watch the movie?
Yeah,
like, yeah, no, that's a good. That was a good point.
Or
yeah.
are they just really big fans? That TV show was very popular.
Yeah,
no, that popular. Was. It was on for a while. It spawned seasons.
A couple of films, couple of directed DVD films. So they've done a lot of legwork with getting the most out of that series. But yeah, initially that did not do overtly well. I had one on. You know, actually, I want to talk about Pixar.
Yeah,
sure.
There are two that we could refer to, but I'm going to talk about one in particular because it's only getting its fair due now. It's The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Why it has taken this... And I understand Brad Bird has always said, I got to wait to crack the story. But the fact that there's been little to nothing done with this franchise...
Yeah.
When other Pixar franchises... Toy Story earns it every time.
Oh, but yeah.
There are other Pixar franchises where I'm like, still going with this, huh?
I think Toy Story is the only exception to that. Everybody else gets no more sequels.
Yeah, I don't know because it just doesn't. It was a big hit when it was out.
Yeah,
that was it's not a contestable point, but that was it.
Yeah,
there wasn't anything else really said about it, and it's the only Pixar film that at the end I was like, well, this will get a sequel.
Yeah,
because a lot of other Pixar films, in my mind, that's the story.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that is it.
Yeah, it finished.
And I'll be honest, Finding Nemo is in that category.
Yeah
me too.
I'm really not yeehaw excited about Finding Dory. I hope it's great because I didn't really care too much about Nemo when it came out either. I didn't, the anticipation towards it, and then I loved it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I really don't care. I really don't care about Cars 3.
Oh, yeah, no.
Whenever that's coming out. But Incredibles is a film that is just now... getting another film, and Hollywood Studios is doing a lot of work. Who do I have to kill to get an Incredibles attraction? Is there any film that begs for an easier made attraction than that? Like, it just fits perfectly.
Especially with what Hollywood Studios, I feel like, is going to
be. It's like, hey, you can't do a Marvel attraction right now, right? Guess what? You have the Fantastic Four already.
Yeah.
Like, you literally made the best version of a Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't have to make another one. You already made it.
Yep.
So, hopefully I'll see something from that. Brian, did you have any...
Two. I mean... This one is, I don't even know if it's really underappreciated, but a lot of people don't really talk about it all that much. I feel like, to me, from it's underappreciated, is Wreck-It Ralph. Mm-hmm. I know it's not that long ago, mm-hmm. because me and Scott were talking about this the other day, but I feel like that's a movie that a lot of people, it's kind of overlook and stuff like that. I think it did well. I'm pretty sure it did pretty well.
It did very well.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, that's a movie a lot of times I think people... It's not one that they hold on to and still talk about.
It's this cycle's Lilo and Stitch. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he's part of the
castle show.
Yeah, the Mads are going to castle. Can't, yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm blanking. He's part of the castle projection show. We've got to see Vanellope finally got her race car in the Halloween. Christmas.
Oh, Christmas. Yeah.
In the Christmas parade. But they were both, they were in it again, so that's really cool.
Yeah,
but I wonder if they'll be in it next year.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Tomorrowland Racers.
Yeah.
How about we bring a bulldozer to that and we have...
Especially, I don't know if you read...
Sugar Rush the Ride is so obvious.
Yeah. It is.
I don't know if you read what they're putting in Disneyland. They took out one of the rides in Cars Land. They took out the flying tires or whatever. And they're putting in a new car ride. And the technology that they were talking about with that ride would be so perfect for something over at Tomorrowland Speedway. It's Luigi's... Rollickin' Rollers. It's a really weird name, but basically what it is in the movie Cars 2, they're in Italy in a village and the cars dance. So basically what the attraction is going to be is the cars dancing, but it's going to be trackless. The cars are going to have like a GPS in them to basically have their movements mapped out, so you could do that for a raceway. I know the cars raceway already has that, but just to do something don't put me on the track anymore. You know, you have the technology. Update it.
Yeah.
Throw Sugar Rush in there. It'd be brilliant.
You know, it just... You can start aligning a lot of TNT to Tomorrowland, and I don't think anyone would care.
No,
as long as Space Mountain and Carousel of Progress are still around, I literally would not shed a tear for anything in that place.
No,
I'm okay with everything being gutted and starting over. Not that Sugar Rush like fits in there.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Whatever, because you know what? There's a
Monsters Inc.
laugh
floor fit in there.
Like, don't tell me about theme when that thing is in there. God, Tomorrowland's a mess. The movie was disappointing. The land is disappointing. Ah!
There's just one more I'm going to throw out there.
No.
Yes. It was a Pixar one.
Okay.
A Bug's Life.
That was the other Bug's Life. That was the other one I was going to
That was the other one, yeah.
It gets thrown under the bus being the follow-up to Toy Story.
Yeah, it kind of had a hard, you know, a hard
I love it. It's a retelling of the Seven Samurai you know, with Bugs. And I'm a very big fan of that. Heimlich is probably my favorite character in the whole thing. That's got a great. That's Joe Ramp. That's also, you know, doing the voice of that. So it's a really cool thing to have that. I'm sorry, Melissa. I think you had one more.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you want to?
Actually, I'm surprised you guys didn't say it in terms of Pixar. I thought you might have talked about Brave, because I do feel like it's underappreciated in terms of, you know, it was beautifully animated. The technology that they used on her hair. I mean. Story-wise, I'm sure it's a little lacking. But going back, I can definitely go back and rewatch it. And I have. I have rewatched it, you know, when it's on TV or whatever. I don't necessarily skip the channel. So I'm sure it's missing a couple things. But I do feel like it's a little underappreciated.
It came and went. I think it did okay at the box office. It wasn't like Good Dinosaur. Good Dinosaur was probably Pixar's first flop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have my issues with the story. I think it's... I get the whole mother-daughter story is a really good thing, but beyond that, there has to be stuff beyond that. And that didn't grab me. My mother is a bear wasn't the most... That's the thing I always say with that movie. My mom's a bear. It's a sitcom. That is a sitcom plot.
No.
And I expected more from that film, especially the way it opens. I thought they were going to give you a lot of... Like, not
lore?
Fable, lore. What's what I'm looking for? Not
myth.
Myth.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot more you know, mythical elements. And they kind of like touch on it, but then they just leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't do as much as, you know, outside of the bear. It's always bear stuff. But there was a lot more. The wisps were such an interesting thing to see.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of went straight across the path after that.
Yeah.
So... Gorgeous, though.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous. Scott, do you have any additional, like, hey, what about this guy?
Mine that I don't think it's talked about a lot is Wally.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in the parks, sort of. He's merchandised a little bit.
Yeah, but...
But, I mean, that's a great movie.
There should be a meet. This should be a permanent character. I mean, he is the character that Epcot needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's right there, and they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
No. Well, he would fit into Tomorrowland also, I think.
He would. That's true. Yeah, he would fit into Tomorrowland.
He could replace the talking garbage can.
Oh, no, you can't replace the talking garbage can.
No, we won't
get to that.
I mean, they have the technology when you meet the cars. They could have you meet Molly. I don't think it would be.
Yeah. I think it would be more interesting, too.
Oh, because, I would love it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know.
Talk to him forever.
Just get me Wally and R2 in a room together.
And BB-8.
And then BB-8, of course.
Because he's adorable.
But yeah, I would say Wally is a film that... It might have the best first half of a film that Pixar's ever put together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people start talking, whatever, it's fine. The humans come in and it's still good. But it's magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
During the spots where there's no actual dialogue.
Yeah.
Which I think is where A Good Dinosaur might have missed.
That's exactly what I wanted out of A Good Dinosaur. And then I saw a lot of talking animals. And I said, nah.
Nah.
You know, we have it at home-ish. And we still haven't even watched it.
Nah.
We haven't really heard very great feedback on it. I wasn't interested in seeing it in the theater. Because there were so many other things. Like, that wasn't something that caught my attention. It did with its trailer.
Yeah.
When
the first
trailer
came
great.
Out, I was like, okay, cool. And then it, you know, everyone was talking. And I was like, I don't want that. Which is, I mean, that's stupid on my part, maybe. You know, that's something like that, like, threw me off so much. but it just wasn't in my wheelhouse for what I wanted. I don't want talking animals in every film.
Yeah.
I don't think I need that. And I really don't think Pixar needs to do that.
No.
And now we have like Zootopia. It's like more talking animals. Like, you know, I get it. Yeah. So hopefully that movie's good. But we're going to get into that later in 2 weeks.
What?
Actually, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a special guest on the show. And we're going to discuss the film slate of Disney for the year 2016. And we're going to talk about each film. And how excited we are towards it and how we're maybe not excited towards it. So if everything goes well, I believe next week we have Three Caballeros, which also deserves a spot on this list or at least to be mentioned. It just 100%. Did not make my top five. But Three Caballeros is one of those because, yeah, they got a whole ride. But how many people have actually seen the film?
I never have.
Nope.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Oh, you guys are in for a treat.
Exactamundo. We have that at the house.
Awesome. Excellent.
So if you guys want to watch it, you can watch it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do that. Maybe we'll have a little movie.
Okay, final shots. Anyone wants to throw out just really quick, just titles?
Nope.
No, you guys I'm good hit for all now. Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Pocahontas.
Yes. Pocahontas. Brian?
There will be blood.
Guys, if everyone can just go on the Facebook page and say Brian loves Pocahontas, that'd be appreciated.
Oh, you want some of the suggestions that some of our listeners have on Facebook?
Yes, please, sir. Do you have that up?
No, I'm going to grab it right now. I just thought of it when you said the suggestion.
Yeah, I remember that we said we wanted to do that, and then I totally forgot about it.
Well, I know there was a bunch that we have already spoke about. You got it?
Okay. I've got it up here. All right. Alice said Sword in the Stone, actually. That was the first reply, was Sword in the Stone.
That's because she's a smart woman.
Yes, she is. MJ Roy said Hunchback. And then actually, Brittany, your sister, backed her up and said Hunchback. And I also threw in Princess and the Frog and Hercules, so a number that we said tonight. Scott, I don't care what you think. Ed actually put up a pretty damn good list, in my opinion. Number one, Great Mouse Detective.
Yep.
Number two, Atlantis. Number three, Rescuers. Number four, Meet the Robinsons. Number five, Saludos Amigos. So a lot of stuff that we went over. Ryan with Emperor's New Groove and Hercules. Nice. And then there was a nice little go back and forth about, you know, the documentary Sweatbox you can find on YouTube. That's all about what went into the pre-production and the nightmare that was Emperor's New Groove, if you want to look that up. Mike said The Black Cauldron, our friend Mike Bernardin down in Florida. And I got to speak to him about that. I'm wondering how long ago he saw that, because I haven't seen that in a long time. But I remember being kind of a little bored with that. But I got to see it again. It's been way too long. And I may have seen it when I wasn't just ready to see a film like that.
Yeah.
Gina said Pocahontas. Totally meant it. Anthony said Robin Hood, going with Bri. Jonathan said Peach Dragon, which that's going to be something that comes up in 2 weeks because that is one of the films on the slate.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Coming up this year. And that's what we had as far as responses over there. So thank you all for throwing in. Your ideas up to there. We appreciate all the participation. But we're going to wrap up this week because I got to go home and edit this stuff and try to have dinner. All right? It's a lot of stuff to do. So, what do we got here? Expialidocious? That's what's playing. That's by Pogo. You can find this and more of his videos over on YouTube.com/Pogo, his music at SoundCloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is PogoMix.net. We are LastGenPodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. If you search on Facebook for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find our little group. Just add yourself. And please head on over to iTunes, hit that 5-star review, and tell your friends about the show. Share it in a post. Share it on Twitter. Do whatever you could, guys. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. And we ask just for that little extra more so we can reach outside of our normal audience. And am I missing anything? Nope. Hey, let us know if you're going on that cruise. All right? February 6th on the Disney Fantasy. As of now, I don't believe anyone that I know of in the group is actually part of the cruise as well. So if you are, give us a little shout out or something on Twitter and let us know so we can say hello to you when we get to the boat. But for now, say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo. Stop coughing, Brian.
Can't have it.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas is amazing.
Of deep satisfaction. Six, two, six, two, six, two, is the life. 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 satisfaction.